You are listening to a sermon by Gareth Brandt, recorded on Sunday, May 12, 2019, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
One of the things I want to address today when we say, how shall we address God? It's an elusive topic because we talk about God and we talk to God. But what language do we use? Which is why it's difficult for me to answer a question like, what is spiritual formation? Today is Mother's Day, and I should first of all make a confession that I don't actually believe that we should bring days like Mother's Day into the church calendar, but I'll confess that when I found out that today was Mother's Day after I had agreed to speak here, that inspired my text more than the lectionary did. Our lectionary text today also actually worked quite well for the topic, even though I will not be using them directly. Three of the four of them are about using the shepherd imagery, which I understand a previous speaker already did for you. The fourth is a text from Acts 9, 36 to 43, which is the story of Tabitha, a female hero of the early church. And you don't hear nearly as much about her as you do about Paul, and that to even that playing field is part of my agenda today. I want to talk about a topic that we take for granted in the church, an activity that we participate in every Sunday without really thinking about it. An activity that we have an entire institution dedicated to that we sometimes also don't think about. We talk about God. When we worship, we say we talk to God or we sing to God. I begin my senior spiritual formation class with this topic. And I've put my notes into a book so that students can read it and we talk about it rather than me just lecturing. I have a few available if you want to buy one later. But I've never put it into a sermon format, and which I want to attempt to do today. We talk about our experience with God. How do we do that? What language do we use to talk about God or to talk to God or to talk about our experience with God? Now, I remember, I think it was in my university days in the early 80s, I became more sensitive to the idea of inclusive language when speaking about people. And that's when we adopted humankind instead of mankind and so on. Some people are still getting used to this 40 years later, but hopefully it is now part of our vocabulary. And some people think it is just about political correctness. But language is important. Language is powerful. I believe that language not only describes our spiritual experience, but language also determines our spiritual experience. Language is powerful. There's a whole genre of studies called theopoetics that delves into this, which I won't get into. But just for a brief example, if you grew up and they were constantly talking about speaking in tongues in your church, you're probably more likely to speak in tongues than someone who never grew up with that language around them at all. Language is powerful. So I think we need to examine the language that describes our spiritual experience and the language that we use to talk to and about God. We need to use words deliberately and with care. Well, some people might then reply, well, how do I ever speak adequately about God? Maybe I should just give up and not even try. This is not a new problem, actually. Even though in our age of inclusive language and hypersensitivity about proper words we use, St. Augustine said, "What can anyone say about you, God?" In other words, all our speech is inadequate. And yet, the second line that he said, "And yet, woe to him who says nothing." If we say nothing, then worship and life becomes meaningless. So we need to hold those two in tension. Now, I believe that all language we use to describe God and to address God is metaphorical. A word is a metaphor. It's a representation of the real thing. It's not the thing itself. Especially when it comes to spiritual language, you must understand that our language always functions poetically or metaphorically. Otherwise, language can become idolatrous. Postmodern philosopher Peter Rollins says, "To take our ideas of the divine and hold them as if they correspond to the reality of God is thus to construct a conceptual idol built from the materials of our mind." In ancient times, and continuing in history, people have constructed statues or golden calves, to cite a familiar story in the scriptures, which reduced God to a physical, tangible object. And this was rightly condemned as idolatry. And we love to criticize people who do this, but we are not that different in our modern times. Because we have sometimes reduced God to an intellectual object. Our theological constructions and our statements of faith and theology have sometimes also become our idols. Which is why I say that we must see our language about and to God metaphorically. So when we talk about God, we must understand that we're always speaking metaphorically. And no one metaphor for God is adequate. Eugene Peterson eloquently says, "An idol starts with a mystery, God, and fashions it into something that can be measured. A metaphor, on the other hand, begins with something common and lets it expand into immeasurable glory." Metaphor uses the language of tangible sensory experience to lead us into the world of the unseen, faith and God. Even though I said earlier, spirituality is about what is inside us. That's metaphorical because I'm not talking about my intestines or my heart valves. But it's the only way I can only speak about this metaphorically. And so today I want to present three biblical metaphors or names of God in the Bible. And of course, names are also metaphors. My name is Gareth. The name Gareth is not the me who stands before you. It's a metaphor for me. It's a representation of the real thing that helps us to meaningfully talk about something or someone. And we need names, and we need words, and we need pictures, and art, and gestures, and songs, and musical notes. We need these things in order to communicate, to feel pleasure, to find meaning, to be human in our connection with each other as human beings and in our connection with our Creator. Woe to you who say nothing. We need to say something. So we've read the three texts, and now I will be presenting each one as a little bit of a spoken word, a poem based on these three texts. Each text or poem will function as a little bit of a metaphorical vignette of how we might speak of or to God. Because poetry speaks more in less words, which is always good for a sermon. In Exodus chapter 3, Moses meets a burning bush. He hears a voice coming out of the bush. He takes off his shoes with a holy hush. "Who's speaking to me?" he wonders aloud. "If I might be so proud, what is your name?" "I am who I am." "That's a name? How vague can you be? It merely sounds like the Hebrew verb, to be. Your name is to be? The self-existent one? What kind of name is that? Am I just a naughty brat? I can't even say it. How do I pronounce it? YHWH. Oh, my heart aches. I'll just say Lord with capital letters. I don't think I can do any better. But that's not a name. How can I frame God? Your name is so vast. You have no past or future. You are always present. You're never spent. Your name is mysterious, awesome, incomparable. Your name is beyond me, unending, incomprehensible. And yet, when your children wandered aimlessly away, thinking they could make it on their own, the prophet Isaiah called them back to stay, to find in you a home. So, your name became personal. Your name became comfortable, palatable, warm. You carried them in the safety of your womb. You protected them from doom and gloom. You gave them birth. You gave us birth. You gave me birth. You held me close and nursed me at your breast. Your eyes met mine with tenderness. I had to pass no test to be loved by you. Would you ever let me go? No. 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 A mom never lets go. Just lets me know my name is inscribed on the palm of her hand. A permanent tattoo. Woo-hoo! Even when I'm old, you take care of me. Even when my hair grays and my body sways. Even then, you steady my hands and walk with me. So I will not fall. And that's not all. There's always one more. You walked through that impenetrable door between divinity and humanity, and you became one of us in Jesus. So how do we address you? Jesus addressed you as Abba. Abba, Papa, Daddy, a term of endearment. This is blasphemy. I'm bent, out of shape. How can one be so chummy with the divine? Has this intimacy not crossed the line? No, we are invited in Romans 8. We are not banished by some cruel fate. We are children of the divine. To call God Abba, it's just fine. And Abba is not about being male. It could, we could use Mama just as well. The point of the name is that it is personal, relational, compassionate, affectionate, close. Now, I don't want to get verbose, but is this the same God that is so far beyond me and yet now invites me to intimacy? Yes. Yes. And yes. How do we address God? God has a billion names. We've only seen three. The Bible is full of names. Open your eyes and you'll see. And we've also sung a number of them this morning, which has been wonderful. Yahweh, the best anglicized rendering of the YHWH. I am who I am, the nursing mother, the Abba, Papa. These are just three. Here's a few more that are not often used. Eagle, rock, fire, wind. 60s music fans will recognize wind and fire. Therapist, mother bear, potter, baker, warrior, lamb. The list goes on endlessly. Some of you may have maybe familiar with Trudy Bayek's book, The Mother Heart of God. She's an Abbotsford journalist. Her subtitle is Unveiling the Mystery of the Father's Maternal Love. I believe she doesn't go quite far enough in her book, even though she believes she's quite revolutionary, and for many people, perhaps she is. Because she still says that God is Father who has maternal characteristics. But I would say that God is Father, but God also is Mother. Both are metaphors. Names are metaphors, and God is too big to confine to one name or one metaphor. I believe that the Bible recognizes this, and we should as well. The more names and metaphors we can discover, and the more names and metaphors that we can discover, the more we will use them, and the deeper we will begin to know God, and the richer our worship will become. And the less likely we are to descend into idolatry. Because when we think that one captures it all, then I think that we are closer to idolatry. And many of our theologians, I think, are leading us down an idolatrous path by insisting on that, even though there are people who would passionately disagree with me, that God is Father, but has maternal characteristics, which, of course, can't be denied in Scripture. But I'd take one step further and say that God cannot be confined to one metaphor, as this is God, and the others are kind of secondary. Worship is our response to God. So when we hear about who God is and about what God has done and is doing, we are inspired to respond. And we need words and songs and art and gestures and so on in order to do this. We don't have to sit in this building to worship God, although it is a lovely place. And every time I come here, I think this might be my last. But you're still here, which is good. Our daily lives are a response to God. to God's initiative in our life. But the value of coming together once a week or however often we gather, the value of that is that that gathering is a metaphor. To go through the rituals, to say the words, to sing the songs, to see the banners, to touch our sisters and brothers, the value of this is that it gives us language and energy to worship in the rest of life. These are the metaphors that we name to give shape and meaning to our daily grind the other 6 days of the week. God exists. God is. God is the vast and incomprehensible, creator and sustainer of all things. And at the same time, God is also the personal friend and parent who nurtures us and who longs to be in intimate relationship with us. That's beyond words, and yet we have to use words. And so let us continue to respond to God in worship today.